All right, good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Peterson. I'm the Executive Director of Mass Waterworks Association. And the Commissioner is unable to join us today, but we're happy to have Stephanie Cooper, who's the Deputy Commissioner at DEP, in his place. And so, Stephanie, with that, I'll turn it over to you if you'd like to give some updates. And I know we usually have Michael Maynard and Jane Downing give updates as well. So.
Great, Jen, thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm glad to have the opportunity to join you. I actually have listened in on these calls regularly, but I realized I've been a silent participant and haven't had the chance to interact, so I'm glad to do that today. And the commissioner is really sorry that he's not able to join you today. So obviously this is our regular biweekly call with public water suppliers, and we appreciate Mass Waterworks hosting and organizing these calls, and particularly appreciate Jen Peterson's efforts. And we are glad to have the chance to virtually gather with you. There are many representatives of DEP here today from in EPA as well to talk about the various challenges that COVID-19 continues to present for all of us as we work to support public water systems. So I think Jen said this already, but just to make sure people know, this call is being recorded, and as has become our custom, we'll post a link to the recording on DEP's website after the call. So if anyone wants to refer to that, it'll be available, and it will be in the same area of our website where we post the updates to the questions and answers that we regularly update. And I, like I said, there are a number of DEP representatives with us today, but I want to particularly recognize Kathy Baskin, our Assistant Commissioner for Water Resources, and Yvette DePisa and Damon Gutterman of our Drinking Water Program are here. And I believe we have representatives from each of our four regional offices from Drinking Water Programs. And so with that, I think I will pause, and I understand that Jane Downing is with us today, and I will pause to see if Jane would like to give an update on behalf of EPA Region 1's drinking water program. So I'll stop and give Jane an opportunity.
Thanks, Stephanie. And Jen, just checking to see if I'm coming in okay. You hearing me? Yes?
Yep, you're fine.
Okay. I hope everyone is doing well. I know we dodged a bullet the other day with the tropical storm. It did hit hard in Connecticut and Rhode Island. And I know you're all hoping for rain, as I am, but stay healthy and stay safe until such time as we get some rain, and then we'll enjoy that. I want to start with some exciting news, which is that we heard from RCAP Solutions that there are 65,000 N95 masks nationally that are available to small and rural wastewater and drinking water utilities. Now, that's not a ton of numbers. As we know, we had a lot more with the face masks, but they are N95, and I want those who need N95s to jump on this if you can. The service population criteria is around 10,000. So if you're a utility with a service population less than 10,000, if you believe you're in a rural area, if you're a tribal system, then I would advise you to see if you can get some N95s. I think they're trying to get about 10 out per system or per request. The link is rather complex, so I sent the flyer to Jen and to Yvette with the hopes that they will get it out to all of you so that you can click on the link. If you don't want to wait for that, then send me an email, Downing, D-O-W-N-I-N-G dot Jane at epa.gov. Again, these are N95 masks available through RCAP Solutions. So we appreciate the early heads up from them. The second thing is to let you all know, I believe Yvette did send this out as part of her updates, but there still are free cyber security assessments available through the EPA contractor Horsley and Witten. Cybersecurity, as you all know, is an area of vulnerability for the utilities. I know it's complicated to make sure that you're up to speed on all of the mitigation measures. So we have free assistance through the contractor that is available to go out and do a cybersecurity assessment and to work with you to develop an action plan on cybersecurity. It will involve the cooperation of a number of utility staff, including those from IT and for operations. But if that's an area that you're concerned about, then we would suggest that you take avail yourself of this free technical assistance. They'll do the assessment, they'll help you develop the work plan, and then they will follow up with you after that on one-on-one. And to get into that program, we know that there are about 5 to 10 utilities that still can sign up based on capacity. If you are interested, then go on the following website. It is horselywitten.com, horselevitten.com/cybersecurityutilities. And the contact for that is Gemma Kite, G-E-M-M-A and Kite. The next thing is just to give you a heads up on funding opportunities through FEMA. So they recently announced a notice of 2 funding opportunities. One of them is the flood mitigation assistance, and the second one is building resilient infrastructure and communities pre-disaster mitigation. They are both grant programs. The application is in September. I think it's the end of September. But between now and then, there's lots of opportunities for training, for webinars, for information to take a look at that would help you work with communities to prepare applications. This is a lot of money. You probably have experience with this, but this is the opportunity to get some mitigation funds through FEMA. And the website for this is actually your Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency website, which you can Google, go in, and there's a lot of information on that. And finally, for those that are interested in a workshop, on August 18th from 1 to 3, EPA is holding a workshop called Effective Utility Management Roadmap Webinar, and it's to help you assess the effectiveness of your operations. I don't have the website, but I hope if you Google EPA Effective Utility Management Roadmap, you might be able to get a link to that registration. If not, send me an email, downing.jane@epa.gov. Thank you all again. Keep up the great work, and let's hope for rain. Back to you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Jane, for that very informative update. That was great. So next, I want to give an update from our drinking water program. I'm going to ask you, Yvette, if you have anything to add to this, but you know, everybody is thinking about possible school reopening this fall, and that does bring some drinking water issues with it. And I understand that our program has heard concerns from a couple of public water systems in 2 regions about building flushing and school sampling guidance. So we do want to put out that reminder for schools to follow DEP's flushing and lead in schools sampling guidance. We do have a refreshed guidance on flushing that we're going to be posting, and we'll be pushing that out through our various networks to schools specifically, and then of course working with Jen to make sure that you all have it. And please also stay in touch with your regional drinking water program contact if there are any particular concerns in that area. And let me pause and see if Yvette would like to add anything to that. Yvette, would you like to chime in here?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Stephanie. We have received quite a number of calls asking about what will be changed in our guidance regarding school reopening, especially as it relates to flushing and to sampling for lead. And we have really good guidance on our webpage that encourages everyone to do flushing prior to opening up when you've been closed or having low flow conditions. And in addition to that, as it relates to the school sampling, we are encouraging schools to do sampling even if you're in there with low flow conditions, because the kids are still having access to the water during that period. And the results that you get, you need to compare that to the 1 ppb level that we're using for lead in school drinking water. And to, if you over that number, you need to post those fixtures until you have figured out what you're going to do with those particular locations. In addition to posting, you also have to go back and do resampling and corrective actions after you've done, you know, made sure that you know what's going on with that particular fixture or faucet. So all of that information is on our web page, and we encourage you to contact our regional staff or even to call, to contact the drinking water program main email address. And we are available to help you in whatever way you need assistance.
That's great. Thank you very much, Yvette.
Thank you.
Okay, I think next I will turn to the licensure board and see if Mike Maynard is on and has any updates he would like to offer as chair of the board.
I'm here, can you hear me?
Thank you.
Yep, okay, just a couple of quick updates. All the application, actually DPL has a new team in place, and they've been easy to work with and very professional. So that would be the new executive director, Karen Brand, the associate executive director, Mary McCarthy, and the administrative assistant who is Ashna Alim. And you may be sending emails to some of them, but they're very responsive and they've been a pleasure to work with. So that's a solid happening with the Division of Professional Licensing. On another note, all the applications and reviews are happening electronically, and we are working through the backlog with DPL to process those electronically. One of the positive things to come out of that is when the application is a determination is made, the email is sent out, you know, within 2 days, and then we have all the data online. So if a question comes in concerning an application review and an adjustment to a license, we can actually look it up and respond quickly. So we're hoping to cut down the response time with DPL and the operators to be more responsive to the operators. So that's a positive thing. All correspondence from an operator to the board should be sent to drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov. Again, that's drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov. And you can CC me, and I've been getting a few of those, and I just bounce them over to DPL because they're the office of record. But if I know about it, then I can continue to chase some of those things down. And as far as applications that are coming in, if you are a contract operation firm and you are sending in applications for one of your operators, please try to be as complete as possible on the application and identify the type of system that it is and the hours that that individual worked at the system. Now, that doesn't only mean actual operational hours, but also there's an administrative review can also be included to that is actually working on that system. So that's a message for all the contract operation firms. I know I can see a few of them out there. So the more specific you are on the application, identifying the name of the system, the type of the system, the hours that they work, the hours that the individual worked, it's easier to process the application. So when the applications do come into DPL, some of the lag time is DPL does an administrative review, and that is make sure the application is complete, and then a CORI check is done on each individual, and a SORI check, a SORB check, that's Sexual Offender Registry Board. So oftentimes, you know, there's a couple week lag from when the application comes in to when it actually can be reviewed by the board. And we're also getting a lot of applications for online training. And there's concern with the board that the online training, the companies that are submitting the online training applications, they have to verify that they, that the individual that is in that class is that individual. So Michael Maynard signed up for the course. Michael Maynard is in that classroom, has to be verified through a visual, through polling, or something else. So the board is very concerned, not concerned, but they're leery of that because they just want to make sure that the individual signing up for the class is taking the class. And that's about it. Back to you, Stephanie. Thank you.
Great, Mike, thank you for all of those really helpful updates. I just had a couple other topics that I wanted to touch on before we go to any questions that we have. One, I know on these calls, often the commissioner references the topic of potential federal stimulus. And I know it's been something that, that the group has been following. And now it's certainly very active and there's been a lot of discussion in the news about work going on in Washington and what direction it might take. And while we don't know where things will end up, we are certainly monitoring it very closely. And I just want everyone on the call to know that Commissioner Subert really has taken every opportunity to really strongly advocate for assistance for all of you for this sector. I mean, you've helped us by being very specific and detailed in highlighting and quantifying the challenges that you are facing. And the commissioner really is advocating for you. So we'll continue to watch that space and see what happens next and stay closely connected on that. The other topic I just wanted to note is the State Revolving Fund. It's the time of the year where applications for funding are due for the SRF. And so for 2021 funding, the deadline is August 21st, and that is for project evaluation forms and all the supporting documentation that is required. And then for existing projects, we have a couple of this information on our website, but I'll just quickly note it that for seeking additional subsidy for projects in the 2019 intended use plan, the deadline was extended for eligible borrowers. And the basically subsidy will be dispersed for construction contracts that are executed by August 14th. So by a couple of days from now, can qualify for that. And then in terms of authorization for the 2020 IUP, the deadline for local approval and appropriation of necessary funds is October 16th. So extended from the typical June 30th to allow more time for those local meetings and votes. So with that, Jen, I was given one question in advance that I could start with, unless there's anything that you wanted to highlight first.
I know. Go ahead, Stephanie. We don't have any other questions in right now.
Okay. So this is actually a really good question that I heard had come in previously, which was about, what's the best way to communicate with DEP staff while we're maintaining this virtual workplace? And specifically was noting, do all DEP staff have cell phones? And I think referring to at least an instance or two where some of you were interacting with our staff who were using either their home phones or their personal cell phones. And the question or the point was made, is that should folks have, government issued phones? And is this the right way to be communicating? Is it appropriate? And I would say, we've made this incredible transformation to our virtual workspace. And it's something that as time goes on, we're continuing to assess. We focused a lot on, computers and equipping people in that regard, but we are sort of reassessing our capabilities and we're looking at phone needs. It is a valid point, and we may be even using some possible sort of online calling solutions, so we'll keep you informed. But in the meantime, I just want to make sure that people know, of course our staff are regularly checking their emails. They're also checking their regular office voicemails, even though obviously we're not there. And so those are, two ways that you ought to be able to reach people pretty quickly. And then it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, for an actual emergency, we do have our hotline, and I'm sure people know it, but I'll just repeat it, 888-304-1133, 24 hours a day, if there were, a true emergency where you need to reach somebody at DEP right away. So with that, I will pause, and Jen, see if there are other questions or if you want to open the floor.
Yeah, so if people have questions, you can certainly put it in the chat, or you can email me at jpeterson@masswaterworks.org. If you're unable to do either of those, then we would ask you to unmute yourself and ask your question. All right. No questions? So I think we have our next call scheduled for August 25th. And then we can see about the frequency of the calls, I guess. It seems our questions are going down a bit, which is good. I think people are getting into their groove, but certainly wanna provide the opportunity for interaction with DEP. So. We have a question. Okay. A question for EPA, the EPA webinar for effective utility management roadmap. Is there any CEUs available with that? Michael, maybe you could just explain the board's process for the CEUs.
Sure. I think we've been receiving a number of applications. So if somebody wants to submit a training class, they submit the application to the board, which makes its way to me. And I review the course to make sure it meets the board's criteria, then issue TCHs. As far as that particular course, I'm not sure when that, who asked that question? Was that Todd?
Yeah, Todd is asking that in the chat. And that's the course coming up on August 18th.
August 18th. And who's doing that course? Do you remember?
It looks like it's an EPA course, but it's being offered by one of their contractors, I believe.
Yeah, I think that one was approved. I just finished doing some work on that one yesterday, but I can get back to Todd and I'll send you the invitation and the response, Jen, so you can publish it. I think it was a free course, and but I'll respond to you and then you can possibly get it out to your membership. Also, New England Water Works can get it out to their membership.
Great, thank you, Michael.
And there was one other one. In DEP has been working with New England Water Works, and in the fall, we have a contract with New England through UMass to offer free trainings on a number of different issues. So we're still trying to figure out what the issues are. And then, so New England will be offering those online trainings in the fall or in the spring. We're hoping for the fall to early winter for TCHs, and that will be on a host of topics that we decide, you know, that the systems could use some help on.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
Does anyone want to unmute and ask a question? Who's at 508-344?
Yes, hi, this is Karen Duby with the Mass DEP Southeast Regional Office. Can you hear me all right?
Yep, go ahead, Karen.
So I just wanted to repeat the Mass DEP emergency notification number. The phone calls have been primarily very easy, you know, very good to hear everybody, but the number was a little bit mixed when I heard it, so I just wanted to repeat that for folks. The Mass DEP emergency notification number is 1-888-304-1133. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Karen. We'll just give one brief update because I know it came up on an earlier call about mosquito spraying, and I think DEP sent out some good guidance about how their sampling protocols will work, but the aerial spraying I think was supposed to commence last night in a couple of areas in the southeastern Mass. And I had mentioned before that there was some legislation that the governor signed into law, which would create a mosquito task force. And so Mass Waterworks does have a spot on that mosquito task force, and they're setting up to have their first meeting on Friday. So, you know, we'll certainly keep people updated on how how that goes, but for those systems in Southeast, you probably have already been contacted about mosquito spraying that's occurring this week.
Thank you, Jen, and we are really glad that MWWA is part of that task force and that it's being convened as the legislation laid out. And I don't know if Kathy wants to mention anything else. As you noted, the Department of Agricultural Resources did conduct spraying in Bristol and Plymouth counties, I believe last night. The typical protocols were followed around excluding water supply areas, and we do the follow-up sampling to ensure that there are no water quality issues. But I don't know if Kathy wants to mention anything else about that.
Thank you, Stephanie. So the good news is that the spraying is complete for this round. So there were 3 planes deployed. They covered 179,000 acres. This is a change from last year's protocol where they were relying on either 1 or 2 planes. So they really were able to get it all done quickly. There were 4 water supplies that provided samples, and their surface waters were not sprayed, and there is a 500-foot exclusion zone around their surface waters, but the water suppliers were Brockton Water Department, Taunton Water Department, New Bedford Water Division, and Abington Rockland. So those were the 4 who participated. There were also several non-public water supply water bodies that were monitored.
Kathy, there is a question that I've gotten through the chat. With the spraying, is there any concern of PFAS with the materials being sprayed?
That's a good question, and I don't know that we know the answer to that. I don't think that we're expecting that they introduce high levels of PFAS. That is a really good question. We can ask our Office of Research and Standards if they have any information about that related to the pesticide that's being used, which is Anvil 10 plus 10. So we can
I do know that that was an issue that was raised during the legislative process and something that the task force was supposed to be looking into. So mm-hmm. More to come on that.
Okay.
All right. So last opportunity, if anyone has a question, to unmute. All right, then I think we are all set for today. Thank you, Stephanie, for standing in for the commissioner. Appreciate it. And we will convene again on August 25th at 2:00. We'll send that information out. Thank you all.
Great. Thank you so much. Everybody take care.
Thank you.